I'm James Taranto. I'm a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. I write a column called Best of the Web Today, and the subject of our debate is one that I sometimes grapple with in writing my column. It presents itself to me as a problem of language. How do we describe the ideology of the enemy and what is not terribly satisfactorily described as the war on terror in a way that avoids, on the one hand, making invidious generalizations, and on the other hand, resorting to mealy-mouthed, politically correct evasions. The debate itself that we're having today, I think, suggests that there's a deeper level to this debate. It's not just a debate about language, but also about history and theology. And our debaters today are going to go more deeply than I typically do in my column. Our debaters are Daniel Pipes and Wafa Sultan. Daniel will go first, followed by Wafa. Let me introduce each one. Daniel is a historian of Islam. He's the founder and director of the Middle East Forum, which is sponsoring our event today. And he is a prize-winning columnist, author of 12 books. We've already heard about the Middle East Forum. The bio here points out that in 2006, Al-Qaeda publicly invited him to repent and enter into the light of Islam, and it's my understanding that he has sent his regrets. Wafa Sultan is a psychiatrist. She's a native of Syria and a naturalized citizen of America. Lives in the Los Angeles area, where I grew up. Long a critic of Islam, she rose to prominence after her incisive performance on a 2006 Al Jazeera interview in which she blamed Islam for the backwardness and barbarity of the Muslim world. Daniel Pipes will be arguing that the solution to the problem is moderate Islam, that radical Islam is a modern-day phenomenon and not rooted in the history of Islam. Dr. Sultan will be arguing that Islam itself is the problem. Let me just describe the format before I turn it over to Daniel, who will go first. Each one of our speakers will go for 10 minutes. I will be keeping time on this precision timepiece. No, it's not Swiss, but that should not be construed as a political statement. After our debaters have said their piece, I will ask a few questions, and then I'll throw it open to questions from the audience. The questions should be questions, not speeches. I've been told to be very strict about that, and I believe in, I think it was Barry Goldwater who said, extremism in moderation is no vice, so I will be strict. I turn it over now to Daniel Pipes, who will go first.
Thank you, James, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Before beginning the debate part, I'd like to put on my Middle East Forum director hat and first thank Scott Kramer and his staff and the entire firm of Kramer Levin for hosting us today, for providing us with this feast at the end. I'd like to welcome both James and Wafa to the forum. I'd like to thank James for moderating today. We all enjoy his wit and insight in his column. Dr. Sultan came to my notice, as many of you, in February of 2006, shortly after her spectacular Al Jazeera debate, which I believe has been viewed some 15 million times on the Memory website. I first met her, along with my colleague Georgette Gelbart, 2 months later in March of 2006. And, Georgette now works with Wafa, and we have been in constant communication since then. I admire Dr. Sultan's courage, her eloquence, and her biography. We are allies. We stand in the same trench. We have the same opponents. Indeed, I've just endorsed her book, which has just come out, A God That Hates. I'm not sure if it's better to be on the outside cover or the inside page, but I'm on the inside page. And part of my endorsement says that Wafa Sultan paints a scorching, unforgettable portrait of Syrian Muslim society, especially the degradation of its women. And she lyrically appreciates her adopted American homeland, which she calls the land of dreams. That said, we do disagree. We disagree on a key point, not about the past, certainly not about the present, but we disagree about the future. The key question is, must the Islamic religion be the backward, aggressive, and violent force that it is today? Or can it be reformed and become moderate, modern, and good neighborly? More specifically, can Islamic authorities formulate an understanding of their religion that permits freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of movement, full rights for women and non-Muslims, an understanding that accepts the basic principles of modern finance, that informs believers to coexist peacefully with non-Muslims without attempting to dominate them, convert them, or impose the Islamic law, Sharia, upon them? Now, Dr. Sultan is one of a number of prominent analysts. Others include, coming right to mind, Geert Wilders and Ayaan Hirsi Ali, both of the Netherlands, who argue that it cannot change what it is, it must be, that its features are inherent to Islam. I'll let her present her point of view. But my point of view is that there is a possibility of change. My argument is in two parts. I'll argue briefly against the idea that Islam is unchanging, and then I'll focus mostly on how Islam can change. Now, first, the idea that Islam cannot change is what one might call an essentialist view, that there is an Islam, what it was in 700, it is in 29, and it will be in the future, that it is what it is, and doesn't change. But I'm a historian, as you heard. I'm a historian, actually, my PhD is in the first 2 centuries of Islam. And what I'm impressed by is how Islam has changed. You can take a concept like jihad, and you see how it's changed over the centuries. And more specifically, I've been in this field now for exactly 40 years, since 1969, and I've seen tremendous change. The Islam of 1969 was very different from the Islam of 2009. And if it can get worse, and it did get worse, it can get better. Things are changing and changing all the time. I believe this is the most radical moment, the most difficult moment in Islam. And I am hopeful that it will get better before too long. Now, how can Islam reform? This is what I'd like to focus on. And I think history offers a course of action. The key to Islam, to understanding Islam, is the Sharia, Islamic law. This dominates Islam's role in both private and public life. I'm going to focus on public life. The Sharia, in short, makes demands that are untenable, that cannot be achieved. It, for example, prohibits war between Muslims. It requires perpetual jihad against non-Muslims. It allows only minimal taxes that are unsustainable for government to operate with. It requires no interest on money that is loaned. It requires four men of upright reputation, to actually view an act of adultery in flagrante delicto in order for an adultery charge to stick. These are all small and big, untenable ways of running a society. To get around these and many other ambitious, overly ambitious demands, pre-modern Muslims, as the Muslims before 1800, developed legalistic fig leaves that allowed for the relaxation of Islamic provisions without directly violating them. So the jurists came up with what they called hiyal, H-I-Y-A-L, tricks, by which they could stick to the letter of the law while negating its spirit. For example, you can have a double sale. We'll get into the complexity of it, but it is in fact a way of charging interest. Or you can come up with various ways of living in harmony with non-Muslim states. I call this the medieval synthesis, whereby pre-modern jurists came up with these tricks and these various means to live with the Sharia without fully implementing it. This transformed Islam from an overly ambitious, demanding rule of laws into something that could be sustained. It worked over the centuries, but it was always open to challenge by the purists, such as the al-Muwahhids in the 12th century or the Wahhabis in the 18th century. These compromises stuck, but they were challenged. Come the modern period, let's call it 1800, this de facto solution to how to live with the laws of Islam broke down. And Muslims went in two rather different directions. One was Westernization, and the other was Islamization. Westernization would be symbolized by Kemal Ataturk, saying that Muslims need to modernize, need to learn from the West, need to adopt Western ways, need to push aside the Sharia. Until 1970 or so, this appeared to be the way of the future. The resistance to it appeared futile, backward, and in unlikely to get anywhere. But in fact, in retrospect, that resistance was deep and wide, and someone like Ataturk had few successors. His Turkey, in fact, is returning to Islamic ways. Westernization tended to attract the most visible and vocal elites, but the bulk of the society didn't go in that direction. Around 1930 or so, those elements that didn't accept Westernization started to organize and developed an ideology, especially in places like Algeria, Egypt, Iran, and India. They argued for total application of the Sharia. The way to be strong in the modern world is to have the full law implemented, not to leave it like Ataturk wanted, but to apply it fully. This is the Islamist movement. It's based on totalitarian ideologies, not surprisingly, going around 1930, fascism and communism were at their peak. It borrowed much from these European ideologies, including the superiority of the state and the validity of brute force, the idea of confronting and defeating Western culture. Through hard work, the Islamist movement became very powerful, and it is today dominant. However, I think it is possible to look backwards to the medieval synthesis and develop something along those lines whereby the Sharia is modified, whereby such elements as slavery and acceptance of slavery and denial of interest are changed. It's quite striking. Half a millennium ago, Jews, Christians, and Muslims generally agreed that interest on money is not acceptable and enforced labor is acceptable. And over the next half millennium, sometimes in very difficult ways, think of the American Civil War, Jews and Christians came to the conclusion that no, forced labor is not acceptable. Interest on money at a normal, reasonable rate is acceptable. These are closed questions. They're no longer open debate. In Islam, these questions have not been addressed. There's still slavery in a number of countries, in some cases legal, and there is a huge industry in which interest is not applied. I believe that the modernization of Islam can take place, and I believe that there are Muslims who wish to achieve this, and I believe those of us who are not Muslims must help by working with those Muslims and not by helping and promoting the Islamists. There are positive signs in this direction, here and there, but for example, the Turkish religious authorities allowed women the right to pray next to men at funerals and go to the mosque while menstruating. May not seem like much, but these are changes. The Iranian government allows women greater rights to sue for divorce. An Iranian court granted a murdered Christian equal rights with a murdered Muslim, and a conference of leading Muslim authorities declared female circumcision illegal. So these are signs of what can happen. They are still small, but there is the possibility of change, and I think it is incumbent upon us to make this happen, to help this happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. I give you Wafa Sultan.
Thank you so much for being here today. Many thanks to Dr. Daniel Pies. I would like to apologize to Dr. Daniel Pies in advance, just in case I happen to be a little rough. Because honestly, I'm used to debating with Muslim imams, not with civilized people. I am more relaxed because I'm 100% sure you're not gonna call me names and issues, fatwas against my life. It doesn't matter how much we disagree. In August 2007, Turkey's current prime minister, Erdogan, made a very revealing and important comment. He reacted to the term moderate Islam, frequently used in the West to describe his ruling party. He stated, "These descriptions are very ugly. It's offensive and an insult to our religion. There is no moderate or immoderate Islam. Islam is Islam, and that's it." This is probably the only issue I totally agree with Prime Minister Erdogan. He understands the irony behind the attempt of people in the West to distinguish radical Islam from moderate Islam. So today, I don't discuss Muslims. I also don't discuss radical Islam, nor do I discuss moderate Islam. These are terms that may make people feel better, but they are only smokescreen adjectives that are helping to excuse and hide the radical nature of Islam. Many of my good friends have suggested that I distinguish between the term radical and moderate Islam. I refuse to do it because, as I mentioned before, I agree with Turkey's current Prime Minister Erdogan that Islam is Islam and that's it. So what's the essence of Islam? The underlying foundation of Islam is to take over the world and submit it under Islamic Sharia. Chapter 48, verse 28 from the Quran reads, Allah sent Muhammad with the true religion so that it should rule over all the religions. The idea then is not that the whole world would become a Muslim world at this time, but that the whole world would be subdued under the rule of Islam. That is the essence of Islam. This is a political ideology that imposes itself by force. When the Islamic Empire was established in 634 AD, the rules that were taken from the Quran and from the Sunnah were translated into a real legal system called Sharia. Under Islamic Sharia, Jews and Christians have three choices: to submit to Islam, to live by a set of brutal rules, or to be killed. Furthermore, the duality of the Quran is a vital concept to take into consideration when discussing Islam. The so-called moderate Muslims may use chapter 86, verse 15, to prove their points of view. That reads, therefore, deal calmly with the disbelievers and leave him alone for a while. While when Osama bin Laden tries to prove his points of view, he may use chapter 8, verse 12, I will cast terror into the hearts of the disbeliever, so strike off their heads and strike off every fingertip of them. In order for anyone to understand my points, one needs to get familiar with Muhammad's biography from E to Z. Muhammad killed every infidel who wouldn't submit. Muhammad repeatedly told Muslims to deceive kafirs. Muhammad was a Jew hater. Muhammad met Jews and the Christian dummies. Muhammad's last words at his deathbed were to curse the Jews and the Christians. Unfortunately, his acts define normal Islam and not radical Islam. But Islam is not only against the infidels, it's also ruthless, in particular to women and to those who convert from Islam. Here, I would like to share some facts on the way Muhammad treated and thought of women. As a married man, Muhammad raped Aisha when she was 9, he was 54. As a married man, Muhammad raped the Jewish woman Safiya at the very same day he killed her husband, her father, and her brother. As a married man, Muhammad raped his son's wife on the same day he forced his son to leave her for him. Muhammad said, a man whose nose runs with blood, mucus, or pus had the right to expect his wife to lick it with her tongue. One Quranic verse reads, your women are your field. Go then into your field as you please. And this repulsive tale goes on and on. Therefore, I cannot help but share with you that when I hear people in the West describe Muhammad's doctrine as moderate or peaceful, I, as a woman who had suffered under Islamic Sharia, feel humiliated and insulted to the core. No academic knowledge of Islam can trump a personal experience of vile life under Islamic Sharia. It is one thing to study the politically corrected doctrine of Islam and another thing to live its reality. So the question, what is for us to do? First, we must ensure electing leaders in the Western world that will defend and protect our freedom and liberty. Also, we must rid ourselves of the most useful weapon Muslims effectively use, that's our craving capitulation to political correctness. The West must candidly use the proper vocabulary to describe reality as it is and boldly confront the truth. Among other things, people in the West need to do is to call a spade a spade. The problem is the evil doctrine of Islam. Thank you so much. Wow.